Age of Vision radio show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision radio show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Vision radio show. Thank you for joining us today. It's May 22nd. It's 8 o'clock on the West Coast here. And we really appreciate you joining us and sharing our station. And remember to tell your friends they can listen to us live on TuneIn Radio, which is very easy to access. So anyways, today we have with us a returning friend of our show, Donna Gilmore from SantaOnofreSafety.org. I'm going to jump right into it because there's a lot to talk about. Thanks, Donna, for joining us. I really appreciate you sharing your time with us.
Oh, I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, so there's a lot on the plate about what we could report on, but let me ask you, what is it that, you know, what's top on your list? There's a lot of things going on in your neck of the woods. So what can we share with our listeners? What do you think is the most important?
Well, one of the most urgent things is there are some proposed Nuclear Waste Policy Act amendments. There's a Shimkus bill. He's an Illinois representative who chairs the Energy and Commerce Committee. And he's got a draft bill he held hearings on. 75 pages. It took me days to figure out what they were doing. It's not an easy one to read. They purposely written it so that you won't be, really be understand what's going on. For example, they will, at the beginning of the amendment, they will reference a section that something needs to comply with, but then later on in the amendment, they'll change the meaning of that section. So the only way you can understand this is to print off the original Nuclear Waste Policy Act, take the 75-page proposed amendment, and actually go and revise the original one before you'll be able to understand it. It's really tricky. Anyway, let me give you a summary of the things wrong with that bill. Number one, it removes state and local rights, including water rights and other utility rights.
Wow.
So it's a federal takeover. It removes the safety requirements currently in the Nuclear Waste Policy Act that would help prevent radioactive leaks. Right now, it requires that you have monitored retrievable fuel storage. They're really sneaky about how they did this. They actually left the definition of monitored retrievable facilities in there, otherwise known as consolidated storage. They left the definition in there. They left the requirements for monitored retrievable, the safety requirements. But then later on, under certain conditions, they allow you to be exempt from those requirements. So they're calling it monitored retrievable storage facilities, but that they don't require them to be monitored or have retrievability. I mean, this must have been written by you know, definitely somebody on the nuclear side. Maybe
how can they do that? How can they, like, write legislation that overrides states' rights? What gives them that authority?
Hey, the federal government, they do it all the time. So, I mean, right now we don't have the, I don't want to get off on a different topic because I'm afraid we'll run out of room, but I could go into that as another thing if we.
Yeah, let's definitely talk about that because that's shocking.
Yeah.
So this is on the docket right now. So how do we prevent that from happening?
The Shimkus bill doesn't have a bill number. It's called the Draft Nuclear Waste Policy Act Amendments Act of 2017. And then there's another bill, ISA, Daryl ISA is sponsoring that. It's H.R. 474 called Interim Consolidated Storage Act of 2017. It also eliminates the current safety requirements to prevent radiation leaks. So they're both awful bills. Let me get back to the Shimkus one. The Shimkus one doesn't have a bill number. They had held a hearing on it. Call it a discussion draft, but the word is that this one's going to come up for a vote in August. So the Shimkus bill is one we need to focus on right now.
Wow.
In addition to eliminating state and local control of water rights and other utility rights, it eliminates state and local oversight of the facility. We'll have absolutely no rights at all. Eliminates requirements for site-specific environmental impacts. Eliminates authorizations currently required by Congress and other checks and balances. Eliminates requirements to prioritize safety and environmental protections over cost and speed. It eliminates requirements to consider transport issues before selecting a site. They're saying that this bill is tied to the Shimkus bill is tied to Yucca Mountain. It really isn't. I mean, they're parsing their words here, which they do frequently. The tie is once the NRC either approves or disapproves Yucca Mountain, then that triggers that you can do consolidated interim storage. Okay, so the only tie is that you have to wait for the NRC to make a decision. It doesn't matter what their decision is. So there's some people in the House and Senate that don't want a bill unless there's for consolidated interim storage, unless there's also a requirement tying it to a permanent repository. So they're trying to claim, I saw something written up by a Democrat, I don't remember his name, he did an analysis of the bill, and he claims it has a tie to Yucca. Now, I assume he knows that the tie is, you know, vote yes or no, and then go ahead and do interim storage, consolidate interim storage. So that's, you know, so that's something sneaky they're doing. They're creating a position for some kind of a director. He only needs very minimal requirements. You know, he needs to have management experience. Right now, the Act says that if you have this director, the director would be over building repository and would be overseeing the consolidated interim storage site. And this director, right now, it's in the bill as saying that they have general supervision under the Secretary of Energy. They took that out. And so it looks like that this new director that has minimal qualifications would be appointed by the president, that he basically doesn't really have any checks and balances or report to anybody, or, you know, there's no oversight to this guy. So he can pretty much do what he wants. And then the main focus of this bill is it authorizes the Department of Energy to create contracts for consolidated interim storage facilities with private companies, and there's no requirements of what that has to contain. So they can cut any kind of deal they want with these private companies. nothing in there about requirements, safety requirements for preventing leaks. This is pretty much they can do what they want, and they can prioritize cost and speed over environmental protections and safety protections. So, I mean, and we had a community engagement panel meeting at San Onofre. It's Edison's PR public meeting where they handpicked the panel members on this community engagement panel. And one of the, the Orange County supervisor, Lisa Bartlett, was there. She's on the panel. And she's telling everybody to support these bills. I doubt she's even read them. I wonder if anybody's read them, let alone understands them. So there's a strong push to support the Shimkus bill, to support the ISA HR 474 bill. I don't think anybody's even reading what these bills do. So I've got at the top of San Onofre Safety .org, I've got a link to a handout that summarizes what I just most of what I went over. And it has the link to the original Waste Policy Act, the proposed ISA bill, and the proposed Shimkus amendment. So people can look up and, you know, read it for themselves. I'm still doing some work on this.
Well, you know, whenever you're taking action with these bills, when you go to the congress.gov site, let's say you're looking at this, will tell you if you see a bill that there's no summary on, like this bill HR 474, my experience is that the bill is so egregious they don't want to create a summary. So there's no summary on this HR 474. You have to read the whole thing, but it is actually
here's the thing. Now you just said something that I will caution you against. Do not just read the bill. You have to, when they are replacing a part of a section or a section, and
you have to read the whole thing.
Yeah, you have to look at what they're taking out. And the ISA bill, the only way that I knew that HR 474 was not requiring them to comply with safety requirements to prevent radioactive leaks was to notice that they were taking out something. And then when I read what they were taking out, you know, with what the section that does that they don't have to comply with, and they'll do it another way. Instead of saying must comply with section, with this section, they'll say must comply with section, you know, 1B or something. They're very sneaky. So if you don't read it closely, you won't understand it. They're
That's
very,
actually true.
Tricky.
It's true. Like, this is what they say. The Interim Consolidated Waste, Title of Number 1, Nuclear Waste Policy Act 1982, 42 U.S.C. 10121, et sec, SEQ, is amended by adding the following. And then they just give this whole big long list. So what they're saying is that they're amended by striking, notwithstanding any other provisions of law, and inserting, except as provided by Section 302, Subtitle 101 of Title I. This is,
and nobody's picking up on this. The ISA bill, it was a little quicker to get through, but I had read the Nuclear Waste Policy Act before, so I was familiar with what's in there. So maybe that gave me an edge, but I took the time. The Shimkus bill took 2 days to get through, and I'm not even finished.
Wow.
with that. And so this list.
Do you think?
Go ahead.
Do you think that these congressmen even read their bills? Like,
no.
Do you think that ISA even has any idea what he's put? Do you think he has this complete knowledge of what it is he's actually doing?
Well, I met with one of his staff, the Department of Energy, John Kotek, came to town down here, and they set up a number of semi-private meetings, and I was invited to one that was held with the San Diego local and county elected officials. And ISA had his chief of staff. I don't remember the person's name. He had his chief of staff there. And I asked him, I said, do you think that what ISA would believe that if you're going to store nuclear waste, it needs to be inspectable, maintainable, and monitored in a way to prevent nuclear leaks. I mean, to prevent radioactive leaks. And he looked at me and he said, well, of course, that's just common sense. And then I said, are you aware that the ISIS bill eliminates those requirements from the Nuclear Waste Policy Act? And his jaw dropped. Yeah, he had no clue. So anyway, I gave him my card and he took some notes and I never heard from him again. So,
wow.
And ISA has not one that really, you know, cares. And I think Shimkus is the bookend on the other end of the country. And neither one of them should be in office. They're totally not responsive to their citizens. They're responsive to the nuclear industry.
Well, ISA is a criminal on his own, right? If anybody knows anything about Darrell ISA, he's got a very shady past. He should not be in Congress. I mean, it's the biggest shakedown I've ever seen. So,
well, we almost got him out. So maybe next time around, he had to really work for it this time. You know, normally he's a shoo-in, but I don't want to waste time talking about him.
So
I'm good. You're going to see a handout right at the top of the web page. I distributed this at the community engagement panel meeting that was in May, and not one other speaker or person from the public, no one else mentioned any of this. And the whole entire meeting was about Edison and their panel trying to get everyone to write their elected officials to support these two pieces of legislation. And not one person brought up any of these problems with the bill at all. So we got 3 minutes of public comments. Judy Jones, who I work with, she got up and read through this list. So, but yeah, so this is something that no one seems to have paid much attention to yet. And now Lisa Bartlett, that she said that this, I think it was her that said this may be coming up. Somebody told me it's coming up for hearing in August, but I mean, she hardly talks much on this CEP on this panel, but she made a huge pitch to support the ISA bill and the Shimkus. She says the Shimkus one seems to be the one that has legs. So they held a hearing on it already. It doesn't have a bill number yet. So you may have, I don't know if you'll have trouble finding it or not, but I do have the link on the handout. And you can, there's actually a hearing you can watch in public statements. But all the people that made public statements, the people from Nevada that made statements at this hearing, they were focusing on Yucca Mountain, so they picked up on a number of these things, but not all of them. You know, they obviously noticed the one where they're state control of water rights.
Well, I'll tell you, there is a link, as you mentioned, your webpage. There's actually links. It's the first thing. If you go to SantaOnofreSafety.org, right on the front page, it says proposed nuclear draft waste policy amendment of 2017. There is a handout, share NWPA handout with your elected officials and others. That's the handout that you were talking about, right?
Yes. Like I said, it doesn't cover all the issues. This was put together rather quickly to be in time for that meeting. So I've talked about some things that aren't on the handout, but to me, you know, the top two things is removing state and local rights and removing safety requirements for preventing radioactive leaks. If those two things don't get people's attention, including your elected officials, I don't
Well, let me just read these bullet points. Tell your elected officials to oppose NWPA amendment because it eliminates states and local control over water rights and other utility rights, eliminates state and local oversight of facility, eliminates requirements for site-specific environmental impact reports, eliminates requirements for monitored, retrievable fuel storage for preventing radioactive leaks, eliminates authorizations currently required by Congress and other checks and balances, eliminates requirement to prioritize safety and environmental protection over cost and speed, eliminates requirements to consider transport issues before selecting a site. Some of these eliminations also apply to ISA Bill H.R. 474, Consolidated Interim Storage. That is a mouthful. Wow.
Yes, and that isn't even, you know, all of what's wrong with it. So I'll be working on a revision to this. I've got some other things I'm also working on, so it's going to take a little time. But
wow.
It's definitely the action here. As people need to inform their local and state and federal elected officials about this bill, even though local elected officials aren't going to be able to vote on this, they are your voice for your entire city. So if you can get cities on board, I recommend getting city resolutions passed that require minimum safety requirements and that they don't support these bills as they are written. And the cities can write letters to their to the federal house. And there's going to be a Senate bill similar to this. So I don't care what state you're in. I mean, they could potentially, let's say you have a current waste site where you are because you have a nuclear plant. You know, they potentially could take that over and say, okay, we can declare this is, you know, if they can get a contract with a private company to manage it and work out those details, they could make any of those places place where they could store the waste and store other people's waste too, other states' waste too. So this is and you can't use any of your typical local ways that you stop things. Like in Nevada, they wouldn't give them a water right. So you know that was one of the hoops that slowed them down there. You know, years ago there was this West Valley fight in California for a low-level waste site. It was 20 miles from the Colorado River that provides drinking water for the most of the Southwest, including California. So, you know, they're taking away the tools that we've had to fight some of these things. So this is basically lets them pretty much do whatever the heck they want, you know. And in Hanford, we see what happens. People think, oh well, you know, they'll make sure there's no leaks, or I can't believe they're this bad, or, well, hey, all you have to do is take a look at Hanford in Washington. They have a double wall tank that leaked. It's not the first time it leaked. It's heading or already in the Columbia River. It's liquid waste. But it's the same principles they're not following. When a double tank, they have a double tank that cannot be inspected, maintained, and monitored to prevent leaks. I don't call it monitoring if you only know there's a problem after it leaks radiation, and that's their current system. You want something, a way to monitor it prior to leaking and give you time to fix it. And when I spoke, I contacted the state of Washington and tried to get a copy of the technical specifications for these tanks because I'm thinking, oh, why are they having all these leaks, you know? And they didn't seem to have those. I found them on my own, and so I've read the actual technical specifications for these tanks. And they're thin-walled. and you can't inspect them fully on the outside or the inside. They don't have any way to monitor them prior to leaks. And these are those are the same inferior standards that are currently being used today in these thin wall canisters being used to store spent fuel all across the country. We've got 2,400 spent nuclear fuel canisters that have thin walls, and nobody knows how many cracks they have because they can't inspect them. We know they can crack short term. They have no idea at all.
And well, on the Washington government website, if you just type in Hanford leaks, it takes you to a page of the Department of Ecology, State of Washington, on, you know, frequently asked questions, leaking underground tanks at Hanford. So you go down to the questions, and they are basically, this is kind of shocking. They give you some blah, 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 but then at the end of it, it says, what does it say? One single shell tank, SST T111, was first reported in February 2013. And then the last sentence says, note that 67 tanks leaked at least 1 million gallons in the past.
Yeah. I contacted the state of Washington. I sent them the technical specs that they apparently didn't have or didn't want to share. And I said, no wonder you have leaks. You're using thin wall tanks, thin wall metal that's subject to corrosion, and you can't inspect or monitor or maintain before they leak. And the response I got back was, well, they were only supposed to be needed for 20 years. That's
wow.
The best answer they have.
Well, this is what they're saying to the threat to public health. The tanks are underground 5 to 8 miles from the Columbia River in an isolated area far from homes and farms. There is no route for the leaked waste to travel from Hanford to agricultural areas, so there's no risk of food crop contamination. Hanford's underground is about 200 to 300 feet below the tanks, so the new leaks will take decades to reach it. And finally, their fourth point is, the groundwater pump and treat facilities at the center of Hanford are keeping the majority of pre-existing groundwater contamination from moving towards the Columbia River. However, the fact that there is no immediate threat to health does not minimize the state's concerns. This is so unconscionable that they can actually write these things and go to sleep at night.
This is the state of Washington?
Yes.
Yeah, so what you have, it sounds like you've got a captured organization at the state level. So much for having any state oversight or state
right.
representation.
That's
yeah.
right.
So, yeah.
Okay, so how do we stop this thing from going on? What do you suggest that we do? Contact our local governments and say, this is what's happening at the federal level. We need to get our own standards set in, so that we can supersede what they're about to tell us?
I mean, the Nuclear Waste Policy Act, it currently has requirements, it has some good minimum requirements to prevent leaks. They only apply to the Department of Energy when they create the consolidated air storage, or in the app they call it monitored retrievable storage. There's nothing in there that says that the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, has to follow those same standards. It doesn't specifically say the NRC has to follow them, and they haven't been. They've actually been approving these thin wall canisters that don't meet those minimum DOE safety requirements. When I spoke to Mark Lombard, who at the time was the director, NRC director of spent fuel management, I said, how can you eliminate the requirement that the fuel assemblies be retrievable from the canisters? I said, it's right in the Nuclear Waste Policy Act that they have to be retrievable. And he says, oh, well, that applies to the DOE. I said, but the DOE is the one that is going to be taking this over. And his answer to me was, well, that's their problem. He actually said that.
Wow.
Yeah. So this is, we're dealing with a totally dysfunctional system. So one of the things we deal with, and I'll answer your question in a minute. One of the things we're dealing with here at San Onofre, since the nuclear plant's been shut down, I mean, everybody, you know, it was easy to get people to say, we want the, you know, we want the reactor shut down. That we managed to get a lot of support for. Once we got to, after it was shut down, what to do with the waste, the community split. There's some that just say, get it out of here. And right now, Edison is, they should get an award for making the worst decisions possible, because they're very consistent in doing that. They're actually storing the spent fuel, or planning to put it within 100 feet from the beach and just a few inches above the high water table. So they have an awful plan. They should be putting it on higher ground.
Why are they planning that? Did they give you any answers as to why that location? Like, why aren't they putting it on high ground?
Okay, the answer they give you and the real answer is two different things. You know the expression, follow the money?
Yeah.
They picked the one that was going to get their hands on that decommissioning fund. There's $4.3 billion in that fund. They will get their hands on that sooner. They will be able to shut down they're planning to shut down the pools when they're empty. They don't have to do any new environmental reports if they stick with that location. So there's a lot of financial reasons why they're doing what they're doing. Okay. Other options that would require delays. So that's why they picked that. But there's quite a few people that just want it out of here. And my position is, okay, number one, NRC, go in another room. NRC regulations do not allow you to transport canisters that have even partial cracks, all right? People, they don't care. They just want it out of here. They haven't even selected a transport route. I tried to get the president of Holtec, who's wants to build a New Mexico consolidated energy storage site. I emailed him. I emailed the head of the San Onofre, and then I also a contact manager at the DOE, and I'm asking them, okay, what route would the San Onofre fuel take to Texas or New Mexico or even Palo Verde, or, you know, what route would it take? Man, they would not answer that for anything. Well, we haven't analyzed that, or we haven't studied that. I mean, every one of them was, you know, one way or another of avoiding answering that question. And even follow-up emails to say, well, what rail line would it take? They would answer nothing. They don't want people to know that these canisters will probably have to go through Los Angeles.
Yeah, they don't want to talk about that because, well, as they transport them, will the canisters be emitting highly radioactive contamination themselves? Or are they protected?
Well, the only way you can in Europe, they use, they don't use thin canisters. They use thick wall metal casts, 10 to 19 3/4 inches thick, that are designed for both storage and transport. And they do meet the Nuclear Waste Policy Act requirements for monitored retrievable fuel storage. So there are containers that exist that do meet those standards, just so you know. But they take what you have to do with the thin wall canisters is they don't protect from gamma rays, they don't protect from neutrons, so they have to put even to get the canister from the pools where they're stored after they come out of the reactor to cool off, just to take it from there to these concrete overpacks that they put them in, they have to have a special thick metal cast for that called a transfer cast. It just transfers just to the concrete. And to transport the canisters, you have to have a transport cask. And you put the thin canister inside the transport cask. Now, that they don't have a one-to-one. The transport cast for these thin wall ones, you're supposed to haul it wherever you're going to take it, and then you, after you take the canister out, that transport cask has to come back to the site to pick up another canister. So that, you know, I don't know how long that transport cask is going to work, but you know it's going to be contaminated as soon as you use it. I mean, because you've got to open it, they've got to open it up, take the thin canister out, and the thin canister's been contaminating the inside of the transport cask, and then you're going to haul that back across the country. Now, there is no container, thick cask or thin canister in a transport cask. None of those will protect 100% from radiation. You don't want to hang out next to one of these things being transported because you'll get some level of radiation. Now, an interesting point, since they've been using hibernate fuel and since they've been putting like 32 and 37 fuel assemblies in one canister, since they've been doing that, they've actually, it went from 20 years to 40 years that you need to wait before you can transport it. The heat load, the radiation level will be too high to meet transport regulations. Too much radioactivity would be coming out through the walls of the transport cask for it to be quote unquote safe to transport. So Edison is using wants to use these 37 fuel assembly Holtec canisters, and those will have to sit 40 years. The 40 years starts from the time they take it out of the reactor and put it in the pool. So they don't want people to know this, but they don't share that very often. They're giving people the illusion that, well, we can get this stuff out of here quick, you know. That's what they're telling people.
Well, you know, as I'm looking... This is a thing. I'm looking at this HR 474 just at the bottom, just a quick perusal of it, looking at the funding of how they're doing it. Did you read this part, what they're literally saying, like they are allowing? I mean, this is, I'm going to dig into this, but
yeah, the funding.
The Nuclear Waste Fund, this is what they're, I mean, it seems to me
they're wanting to redirect. The interest, there's two problems with the funding on the ISA bill. They're wanting to redirect the interest earned on the permanent repository fund. That fund was created by utility ratepayers, put in money. That money was for a permanent repository, okay?
Right.
A one-time permanent repository. That was that money's for, including the interest it earns. They want to take the interest and use that for consolidated interim storage sites. And then what's even more scary is that if you run out of interest, that's it. There's no more money.
That's what it's saying. What I was about to say. Like, just a quick perusal of reading about the funding of it is it's limiting their ability. Yeah. Shall not expend on fees for dry modes of storage. I mean, it's just being totaling more than cumulative amount of interest by the waste fund each fiscal year, beginning fiscal year 2018. That means next year they want to eliminate the amount of money that we can spend protecting ourselves.
And in the Shimkus bill, I have yet to find the funding source for it. I keep looking about where the funding's coming from for the consolidated interim storage site. I haven't found it yet. I don't know.
Donna, you connect with these offices. Do you think these congressmen, they read this, they understand what it is they're putting their names on, like the gravity of the harm they're going to cause our people and our environment?
They're listening to, people like Dr. Christine, who is the president and CEO of Holtec, that makes these inferior canisters, and who also wants to set up a site in New Mexico, close to the border of Texas. He had a recent press conference, and he says, "Hey, I have the solution to all your problems. You know, I can take 10,000 canisters. You know, I've got the solution to this waste problem. All I need is your approval to, you know, for a green light to do it. That's the only thing holding me up. All your problems are solved. And he'll tell people, oh, nothing's going to go wrong. You know, nothing's going to go wrong with anything. And they apparently are believing it. I mean, the new,
wow.
And then the Department of Energy in there, they held meetings all over around the country, except where they plan to put the consolidated interim storage, except there they didn't hold meetings in Texas and New Mexico. But in their handbook they gave everybody, it says the waste is currently safely stored. And that's a lie. That's a total lie. It is not safely stored. The New Mexico governor wrote a letter to Department of Energy Moniz, and in the letter she says that one of her local communities wants to store this way, she doesn't have a problem with it since it's safely stored. She put that right in her letter, since it's safely stored. So wow. She's buying the act, that she's buying this if it's safely stored. The NRC had been telling people, and they have it in their official continued storage document approval, that, you know, they're estimating the canisters would last 100 years before they needed to be replaced. There's no technical basis for that statement. In fact, there's plenty of evidence from the
100
NRC.
Years?
Yeah.
They're meant to last 20 years, aren't they?
They're licensed for 20 years. They're licensed for 20 years. And in that license, the NRC ignores any aging issues that may occur after that initial 20 years. Now the NRC has adopted.
I mean, is that in the laws that after 20 years they ignore? I mean, like, say that again.
Here's how I know that.
Oh my God.
I thought there were two canister systems that Edison, Southern California Edison at San Onofre, wanted to use. One was a New Homes 32 PPH2, it was called. That was with Areva New Homes. And then another one they considered and eventually decided on, the Holtec one that holds the 37 fuel assembly. And those were ready to be approved in the Federal Register. You have 30 days to comment. And I commented on both those, and they yanked them from approval from the Federal Register. So I managed to get some delays, on the approval. And when they eventually did approve them, I had made comments about the issues that they can't be inspected, et cetera, et cetera. And in their comments, in response to what my comments, in the official approval, they have a section in there where they give responses to the public comments. And that is where, in the official approval document for the canisters, they put that they exclude considering aging issues in the first 20 years. They put it in writing there in response to my comments. So it's on the official record, and I have that document. So,
wow.
But now they've got a document now called New Reg 1927 Revision 1. That's the aging management, NRC aging management document. And you will hear utilities say, well, we will comply with NRC's aging management regulations. This is the document they're referring to. That document actually requires them to take a canister out of service if it has 75% through wall cracks in the container, okay? That's what it has in there. You wouldn't know that unless you could interpret ASME codes. They didn't make it clear. They have no way. So the NRC has some requirements in there, but the industry has no way to meet those requirements. They can't inspect these canisters for cracks. They have no way to do that once they're loaded with fuel. So the NRC has a document with some requirements that can't even be met. So, and the NRC knows they have no way to find cracks, so they're giving them 5 years before they have to meet that requirement. But the requirement's ridiculous anyway, because There's no seismic rating for a partially cracked canister. They only do seismic rating assuming perfect materials, whether it's in a reactor or in dry storage. So, I mean, that document's still a farce.
Do you think they have done any studies on seismic ratings for containers that might be leaking have they done any type of work figuring out the seismic ratings?
I don't know.
So we haven't seen
now, that. Yeah, now, EPRI, which is a Electric Power Research Institute, that is a utility-funded research institute. I had someone from EPRI tell me, well, you know, it, depending on who, pays us, contracts with us to do a report, we may or may not be able to share the results with the public. And that was his way of
What does that mean?
Is he knows things that he can't share. That's what that means.
How can that be legal?
But we have enough information.
How is that legal? This is the stuff that shocks me. These are things that are detrimental to our life and our health. How can they keep that private?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I think I mentioned this last time, but I know sometimes you may have different listeners. I met with the former chairman of the NRC, Allison McFarland, who considers herself an expert on nuclear waste, in addition to being the former chairman of the NRC. And so she was responsible for these containers and what got approved, what was approved. And when I met her in person, I tried to communicate electronically, but the message just doesn't seem to be getting through to her. So when I met her in person, I met her before, but anyway, this time I said, well, you know, these canisters can't be inspected even on the outside. And she looked at me and she says, what are you talking about? You know, like I didn't know what I was talking about, because it's unbelievable if you think about it. And I said, well, you know, the thick wall cast, you can get next to them. And then the light bulb went off in her head, and she says, oh, that's right. The thin ones, they have to be stored inside the concrete overpacks because of the radiation levels. And there's no technology that could inspect them while they're in that overpack. And the light bulb went on. I saw it in her head. The light bulb went on. Like she just got it. And this is a woman that was part of writing this 2003 report recommending taking fuel out of the spent fuel pools and putting it in these horrible thin wall canisters. I don't know who she's listening to, but I'll tell you, a lot of people are listening to the wrong people and not doing their homework. And so
pretty detrimental to our lives, though. Like that's, I mean, my question is, okay, it went off in her head, but if she understands the gravity of ignoring these things, I do not comprehend how these people who are in these positions of power can just ignore.
Well, let me tell you what she said after that. Once she realized they couldn't be inspected, then she said, well, maybe that's not that important.
Wow. Wow.
So, you know, the people that managed to get in these positions, you know, and here's the thing with the elected officials and even with a lot of the anti-nuclear community and the independent safety experts, this information that I have about the canisters seems to have been pretty much hidden from everybody. Holtec's out there telling, oh, these will last 100 years, told Vermont, all these will last 300 years, no problem. I mean, you know, all this kind of stuff. And, you know, sometimes I wonder if people just look at PowerPoints and that's how they do their research. But I wouldn't know this if I had not listened in to an NRC technical meeting. If you want to know the truth of what's going on, listen. These are public meetings. They're held almost daily. And somebody would look for volunteers to listen in on this meeting about canister issues. And I listened in. And that's when I found out that they realize that these canisters can crack prematurely, but yet they have no way to find cracks. and they're trying to figure out what they're going to do about it. And I could not believe what I was hearing. It sounded just totally unbelievable. I mean, if you were going to buy a car, would you buy a car that couldn't be inspected, maintained, and monitored before something failed? I mean, this is crazy. This isn't a nuclear issue. This is common sense, basic material corrosion, basic design of anything. And any person can understand this. And when you're talking to your city councils and other people, I have on the website, I have a city handouts section, and that has a sample city resolution for demanding that while the waste is here, that it should be in, you know, maintainable, inspectable, maintainable, not prematurely cracking, just basic things that you would expect in a car. No city feels qualified, no city elected official feels qualified to pick a container for nuclear waste, but they do feel qualified to say, as the ISA chief of staff said, well, that's common sense, inspectable, maintainable, repairable, and monitored to prevent a leak, the key word being prevent a leak. So city councils are comfortable signing on to those kind of requirements. So the fact that these two bills, Nuclear Waste Policy Act amendment bills, eliminate those requirements should be enough to get support from city and even federal. But I doubt they know these things. You know, I met with the Department of Energy, John Kotek. He and McFarland were on Obama's Blue Ribbon Commission for what to do with the waste. And he did not know these canisters couldn't be inspected. He assumed the NRC was doing their job. His chief deputy, Andrew Griffith, he couldn't believe when I said they couldn't be inspected. He said, well, that can't be true. They have to be. That can't be true. He's a former nuclear engineer on a submarine. And I was able to provide him the evidence to show that what I was saying was true. So these people don't know. They really don't know. So until they know and have credible evidence, this is not an opinion. This is not Donna Gilmore's opinion. These are facts, you know. I don't deal in opinions. I deal in facts. And I believe that the majority, maybe even all of them, don't know the facts about how dangerous the waste is that's currently being stored. And the local community, some of them are willing to take any kind of legislation if it just moves these chairs on the Titanic to somebody else's, you know, community.
And moves them to the back of the ship so they're farther away from the iceberg, I guess.
Yeah, but, you know, I tell them, hey, there's no fence in the sky that's going to stop a Chernobyl's worth of that. Each canister contains about as much radioactive materials, radionuclides, as was released from the Chernobyl accident. It's not a Chernobyl reactor in a can, but it's all the radiation that was released from Chernobyl in a can. So I call these Chernobyl cans. It's a better way to understand them. It's not an exact number, but it's about as much. You know, some canisters have 24 fuel assemblies, one have 37, but you can say it's about as much radioactive material, specifically cesium-137 is what I have the data on, that was released from the Chernobyl nuclear accident in Russia that still, you know, a lot of it's still circling the earth, and they can't eat reindeer in Finland because it's still got radiation contamination in their mushrooms. And, you know, so at San Onofre, we have 50 of these Chernobyl cans. They're planning to put in 75 more and totally ignoring these safety issues. I also have, if people are wondering, well, how many of these Chernobyl cans do I have near my reactor? On the homepage of San Onofre Safety, if you do, if you go down the page a bit, you'll see a handout related to inventory. And the first inventory handout has mm-hmm. a two-page chart or a two-page table of all the canisters that have been loaded up to June 2013. It'll show you the date they were first loaded. Now, the Coburg nuclear plant in South Africa has a tank that the NRC says is comparable to our thin wall canisters. That tank leaked in 17 years.
Wow.
And the cracks, the largest crack was 0.61 inches deep. The majority of the canisters are thinner than that crack. The majority of the canisters are only half inch thick walls. And so 17 years. And the cracks can move faster in hotter materials. And that Coburg tank was just at normal outdoor temperature. It wasn't even hot. So we are past due. So now one of the things scientists would tell you is that there's no way to predict when a crack starts. All we know is all these canisters have conditions for cracking, the kind of material they are and welded. And there's a number of things that can cause them to start cracking.
Let me ask you this about the cracking. Like, all these canisters were put in within the same decade because we built up our nuclear arsenal around the same time. So they've been producing. They have a 20-year life. It sounds like when we look at the number of canisters that are 20 years or older is beginning to increase. I was looking at your canister list. Like, some of them are 30 years old, some of them are older, and most of them are approaching the time when we know they're going to start leaking, right? Has the NRC...
We can't say when a crack's going to start. These canisters, most of them haven't been used more than 10 years. There's some that have been used longer.
But so the point is, when they get to that point, have they developed a plan so that when that starts happening, they'll be able to manage it? Because there's a lot of them out there that are going to start leaking. They know that's going to happen. Is there any plan?
The only approved NRC plan for dealing with removing the fuel from a bad canister is to return the canister to the spent fuel pool and put it back underwater. That's the only approved plan. Okay, whether that works, I'm not sure if that even will work. But these decommissioned plants, the NRC has been allowing them to destroy the pools after they empty them out. So the only approved NRC method to unload fuel by putting it back in the pool, the NRC is allowing them to destroy the pools. And for a while there, the industry came up with some different, we'll bring a portable hot cell, which is a lead line building that they can robotically do stuff. Well, there is no such thing, and there can't be one big enough. So that I managed to bust that myth. Then they started saying, oh, if we have a leaking canister, we'll put it inside a transport cask. Well, there's no transport cask approved for that purpose. In fact, the NRC did an analysis years ago and determined that even fuel that was cooler with a leaking canister, it would eventually overheat.
Wow. I have to jump in. We have like 20 seconds left. This hour has gone fast. I hope I can get you back on sooner so we can delve into a lot of things that we didn't have time to talk about. Thank you for joining us. We have about 15 seconds.
Okay. Well, now Edison doesn't even say they're going to put them in those transport cows. Now they say, oh, well, these are so good, nothing's going to go wrong. That's the best they got.
Well, put your courage behind you. We'll talk to you later. Thanks, Donna.